everyone. We made it to Friday. Woohoo! Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We have a great show today. Ice Cube is going to join us.
Who here is on Jenna?
Set. Ice Cube.
There we go.
He's going to join us on set. The Giants are closing in on a record-breaking deal with OBJ. Doug Peterson is disappointed in his offense, especially after last night, and an odd night for Tyrod Taylor. That's where we start today. Browns and Eagles, Thursday Night Football. Browns had made it very clear this preseason that Tyrod Taylor will be the starter over rookie Baker Mayfield, but when Taylor had to leave the game last night with an injured wrist, Browns had to be scared. He did return to finish out the first half, but never returned to the sideline after halftime. Baker came in and he sputtered with the first unit, only throwing for 76 yards and a pick on the night. CC, before we get to Baker, what do you make of Tyrod Taylor getting back in the game after leaving with an injury? Were you surprised the Browns brought him back in a preseason game?
Get the Browns. If I'm Tyrod, I'm going back in the game.
Yeah.
Like, why would I continue to tell you guys this. I think if I'm not on the show, this happens to be my show, there's something. I'm either on vacation or I'm doing something very, very, very important that I wouldn't be here. I ain't gonna let nobody sit in my seat. Ain't nobody gonna be co-hosting First Things First on Chris Carter. No, we trying to establish ourselves. If we've been doing this 15, 20 years, yeah, I'll take 6 weeks vacation, have people run in and out and everything. No, 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 no. Tyrod knows who he is, all right? No one is giving Tyrod a whole bunch of confidence even since he's left college football. When he went to Baltimore, he was pleased to be able to develop there. But they never told him, hey, you're going to be a starter. No one's ever promised him anything. He went to Buffalo. You know what they did since he got them in the playoffs to end their drought? Oh,
they got rid of him.
They got rid of him.
Get rid of him while
there are certain players in the NFL. They know who they are. They have great perspective, great insight. They don't think they're someone else. He knows that kid, Baker Mayfield, the first opportunity is going to get in there. You said it. Cleveland Browns, they're pubbing him up. They want him in there. You think he's not seeing all that? Why would I give him the chance? If I'm not hurt, if I don't think I'm going to hurt the team, I'm going back in there. There's more work to be done. And that's why you saw him immediately get his helmet from the training staff and immediately place himself on the sideline with the coaches to let them know I'm available to go back in and do my job. That is the mentality, especially of someone who is a journeyman and someone that can be replaced easily by Baker Mayfield. No, Tyrod did the right thing. That's what I would do that. I would do that even late in my career. Guys would know, don't come in for me. And guys like, the coach told me to come in for you. No, I'm staying in. And Denny Green would be like, Chris, come out. And I'd be like, okay.
Okay, but you have to assume that the Browns want to take care of him. The Browns know that they need him for the games that actually count. So why would the Browns, despite what he says,
want to go in? I don't think it was the type of injury that they were worried about further injury. I think that, listen, I thought when it happened, I tweeted it out, I thought he broke his wrist. I thought there was a fracture in his wrist. It bent funny to me. I was devastated for him.
People are going
to
amputate his arm. But football players, we have to play. When you're under, you can lose your job, all right? Like, he knew he wasn't injured.
But he's already been named the starter, so why would he lose his job?
Hold on a second. Wait, let me do this real quick. Because if he had a broken wrist, though, he wouldn't have been able to go
in. He wouldn't have been allowed.
Of course.
They wouldn't have given him his helmet.
No.
They would have removed that variable from him.
Exactly. That's the point I'm making is he's on the sideline. At first, right after he goes down, players start calling over the training staff. He hops up and runs. They then take him into the locker room, assuming to do an x-ray. They realize he does not have a broken wrist. And then exactly what you're describing is what I think happened, which is that he said, no, like, I can't. I have been named the starter, and I am the starter in name. But I also don't just have a first-round pick behind me. I have the number one overall pick of the draft behind me, a guy who you, I think, very intelligently yesterday pointed out the team on its Twitter account is putting out, letting him goof on the GM. Like, as much hype surrounding this player as anyone in the draft. I cannot get Wally Pipped here. Like, that's not going to happen to me. It's going to happen to him eventually in the pregame. I think Troy Aikman mentioned it, that Tyrod's the 29th starting quarterback for the Browns in the last 20 years or 10 years. And pretty soon Baker's going to be the 30th. We all know, is Strahan that said it actually, that eventually Baker's going to take over. This is a unique situation because in the meeting before the show, our producer Ketta said, you know, for the vast majority of starting quarterbacks, if you have any type of injury in a preseason game, no matter how minor, your coach isn't letting you go in.
Totally agree.
Right. This is an outlier situation.
And those quarterbacks know they don't need to go in because they have solidified their position not only with the coach but with the organization.
And is this – so the only question would be, in your eyes, something like this, did the Browns – was he at further jeopardy for further injury by going back in the football game?
What difference does it make if they're going to put the kid in anyway? Like, I mean, football players, other players play with nicks and bruises and bumps. That's what he had. Once they got past, is he injured or not, we know what the inevitable is, all right? Baker Mayfield is going to play. And as a veteran player, you would be naive, not being aware of what's going on around you, if you would think that, you know something, I'm just going to let him play the rest of this 3.5 quarters of the game. That would not be a good professional move.
And
now, I don't expect people who watch football to understand that mentality, but Tyrod has the right mentality, and the coaching staff understood that.
And I said yesterday on the show that the one of the reasons I was excited to watch yesterday's game was Tyrod has done everything in his power to hold off Baker. Because Baker's played up until last night, he played well in the first two preseason games. But Tyrod hadn't made a mistake yet. Tyrod was 75% of his passes, led the team on scoring drives. And we mentioned yesterday that, barring injury, Tyrod was going to be the week one starter. But the narrative could shift with a bad Tyrod Taylor game and a great Baker Mayfield game. It could have really shifted with a Tyrod Taylor game where they haven't scored points and he gets dinged.
What would the question be if Tyrod had not come back in? What would the first question starting the show be?
Right. Is Baker Mayfield now going? Oops.
And you know what Tyrod did? He removed that question by coming back into the game.
Except that Baker did come out in the second half and didn't play well. He actually had probably his
worst
more
preseason
horror
game.
Games, yeah, that he's had.
But he doesn't know that going into it.
Correct. He doesn't. Except that he has, he has the notion that he's the starting quarterback, plus the general manager who has a history of when he makes a
Baker
declaration.
Baker Mayfield does not have that notion.
No, Tyrod does.
Tyrod does not think that he is like a starter. He thinks, I'm a guy that right now I'm actually just driving the car. He can't think that he's a starter with Baker Mayfield being the number one overall pick. Does that make sense to you guys?
No, it makes sense, except that we have talked the last couple weeks. I only bring that up about John Dorsey having worked at different organizations where once he makes a declaration that someone's going to sit, they sit. It's not like the situation in Buffalo where maybe A.J. McCarron is healthy again. He could play. Maybe Josh Allen will play. It's been pretty much stated.
Right, but the one thing that can change it is injury.
Correct.
And that's why he was trying to make clear to everyone, I'm not hurt, that it was a different situation. I thought in real time watching it, he was seriously hurt. I didn't think there'd be any question about it. If you have a fracture in your wrist, even whether it's hairline or serious, you're going to be out a few weeks until that heals, non-throwing hand or not, unless you're a defensive lineman where they can just put a cast on it. Like, I thought he was significantly injured. When he came back on the field and there was nothing on his wrist, I said, oh, okay, so it's not broken. They obviously did the x-ray. And then he wanted to remove all doubt because Chris is right that every show in America would be asking, even if the report was the exact same injury report, no fractures, just got hurt, the question would be, okay, is Baker the starter now? Now, maybe not if Baker plays very poorly, but there was no way to know if Baker was going to play very poorly.
So quickly, before we move on, what did you think of the way Baker played last night? Who had a better game, Tyrod or Baker?
Neither one of them played well. Their offense, they sputtered. The best player on the offense, I thought, was Carlos Hyde.
Yeah.
And you can see he's a quality running back. He's going to add a lot to their offense. They need another wide receiver. How dependable will their tight end be? That's going to be proven out over the regular season. He wasn't creating a lot of separation. Very good athlete, good prospect, good project. But Jarvis Landry is not enough from a wide receiving threat. They need Josh Gordon. They need someone else to be able to step up so we can look at the quarterbacks and be like, no, this is a football team. As an offense, they didn't play well. All right? That's how you get 5 points. All right. There's no way you can leave a game with 5 points unless you're playing against the 85 Bears, Ray Lewis, and the Ravens, and be like, hey, I'm happy. No, no NFL team's going to be happy with that. So neither one of them played well. The offensive line did not help them. But also, they're going against a good to great defensive unit with great personnel. So, no, there's no need to say which one of these guys looked better. They didn't look good as an offense moving forward. So try to make the distinction between, Tyrod looked better, Baker looked better. I can't do that. Offensively, they didn't look good.
The thing you said there that I think is most interesting is you believe they need another receiver, that Jarvis Landry, as wowing as he's been in practice, as big of a story as he's been through Hard Knocks, and as good as he'd been in the first couple preseason games, that you don't think he is enough of a speed threat for this team right now to be the offense they
want
to be.
You need more variances. When Philadelphia decided they wanted to come after the Browns last night, they couldn't stretch the field. They couldn't throw the ball down there with the guy who they were afraid of. No, Jarvis Landry doesn't do that. Quality wide receiver, but they need Josh Gordon. He would add a big punch to their lineup.
Best player for the Browns yesterday was Myles Garrett, and we'll talk more about him later. He looked like the guy they drafted, different guy they drafted number one overall a year ago.
And then speaking of receivers, Dez Bryant's name is back in the mix. We will talk about that as well. But coming up on the other side, are the New York Giants on the verge of a comeback season for the ages? That's next on First Things First.
Fox Sports Golf host Shane Bacon here, and with summer winding down, I wanted to tell all First Things First listeners about an exclusive offer from TeeOff.com. Ridgewood Country Club isn't the only must-play course in the tri-state area. The golf club at Mansion Ridge is a Jack Nicklaus design that boasts the same pristine conditions at a parkland-style course. But if you're looking for a links or a beachfront-style course, check out a collection of thousands of other great golf courses across the country at teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and start booking tee times without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time, plus as a valued listener to the Clubhouse podcast, that's my podcast, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. And if you like this golf stuff, come on over and give my podcast a listen, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I talk about golf. I have guests that like golf. It's pretty golfy. I just said golf way too much. That's a lot of golf. The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. Listen to it. All right, back to the show.
Moving on to Odell Beckham, who some could say has had a quieter preseason than I have, and I did literally nothing. Odell has flown so far under the radar, the Giants are finally closing in on a contract extension. Two sides progressing towards a record-breaking deal for the young receiver. Hearing this could actually get done by the start of the season. And Nick, sure makes you happy that his hair is as yellow as ever.
It's almost white now, yeah.
CeCe, how important is it to get OBJ's record-breaking deal done by week one?
I don't think it's that important. I think that right now both sides realize that they want to be together. Odell's doing his part. The Giants have always done their part. They've gotten fairly close to a deal. It's not important that it's done week number one when you know you're close, like you know you're going to have the money. The player has the confidence he can go out there and not be worried about a career-ending injury. So, to me, what date it gets done, long as it gets done the first couple of weeks into the season, it really wouldn't matter to me. There is no big difference in getting it done the last week of the preseason game or getting it done 10 days into the regular season. It's not a do or die situation. What it is, though, is it's if they're on the same page and the deal is close, then both parties know it. I believe that you can move on without having the deal signed.
So I actually talked to Odell this weekend, and their contract stuff never came up, which says to me, I mean, I think he believes this is getting done soon, because in the past, this has been a source of extreme anxiety for him from even a year prematurely when we were with him in Los Angeles or when he had been asked about it prior to this offseason. And I do think it's noteworthy that when you look at the draft class that he's a part of, two of the other best players in that draft class who don't have deals, one of them hasn't even spoken to the coach in Khalil Mack. One of them is threatening hold not only hold out of preseason games, but regular season games in Aaron Donald. And Odell's done none of those things. Now, those two players had more capital to spend, so to speak, as far as not having off-the-field incidents. But Donald also held out all of last preseason before showing up, and the Rams forgave his fines. I agree with C in that there are certain teams. I'll take a team I used to cover, the Houston Texans. They just had a rule We do not negotiate contracts once the season begins. So if you do not get a new contract prior to the first day of the regular season, you're not getting one until the end of the regular season. If the Giants had a deadline like that, then it'd be a big deal if it gets done here in the next 12 days or whatever. But they don't have that rule. So what this tells me is they're getting this deal done in short order, which was not a sure thing. I mean, there was real speculation about whether or not the Giants would let him play out this year, see how he acts. Put the franchise tag on him, see how he acts. Like, they had the ability to control him without any long-term commitment, have a year-to-year control over him for the next three seasons. And I know Coach Mangini talked about how that could be attractive for the team. He's getting $9 million this year.
Right.
What now? He's probably going to come close to doubling that. It wouldn't have, in my eyes, been the right thing to do with the best player on your football team, but it was an option to him. They're not going that route, which I believe to be best for both parties involved.
All right, so if things are good and Odell's going to be there and he's happy and you're calling him one of the best players on the team, if not the best player, you have Saquon Barkley who will probably come back from that hamstring snag and be back. How good could this offense be, CC, this year?
That offensive line, I still believe that they can't be a top 10 offense because of the offensive line. I believe the offensive line holds them back. Yeah, because if you can't block the quarterback, if you can't have a powerful running game, Nate Solder is a good player, paying him $15 million, but he is not a good run blocker. He's an adequate run blocker, very good pass protector, big guy, very, very athletic, but he's still limited, even at that price tag. So I expect them to have some huge problems from an offensive line standpoint. And if you can't block people, no matter who you got on the outside, you can't run the ball on a regular. If you can't dictate, it's starting to get cold. You can't dictate when we're going to run, it becomes a problem. Until they prove that to me, I just think they'll be a middle-of-the-pack offense.
So you think the offensive line is far worse than I do. I think the right side, the right tackle
position.
No,
I know the offensive line. I'm not guessing about that.
Well, then you know something about Nate Solder. They don't, because they don't – I mean, they don't think Nate Solder's a middle-of-the-line blocker. Like,
well, if they, you
– go ahead.
I've been analyzing Nate for a long time. Tom Brady's got one of the quickest releases – in the game. Nate Solder is not a dominant left tackle. He's a good left tackle. He is not a great run blocker. That's just who he is. It's not my fault. He's just on the Giants. We're analyzing the Giants.
No,
he happens to be their tackle.
Right, but they I think, understandably, are expecting more from
Sometime
him.
Sometime in
are.
Free agency, you pay
you
more
overpay,
because
sure.
you don't have them.
It's an auction and whoever.
And that's one of the reasons why New England decided to allow him to walk.
And so, I mean, so they have Solder, who I guess I'm baking in that he will at least be one of the, not the best, but one of the better. He doesn't have to be the best because he's the highest paid, but one of the better left tackles in the league. I don't know what Will Hernandez will be as a pro. I know they spent a very high draft pick on him as a guard. And their skill position guys, there's only a handful of teams that can look eye to eye with them skill position-wise. The Saints can, the Steelers can. The Chiefs can, the Rams can, and that's about the list as far as running back, wide receiver, tight end, secondary wide receiver in the Steelers' case. Like, they have all the weaponry you'd like. See, I look at the Giants and say they have one big weakness on offense, the right side of their offensive line. I know you think Eli's still, at the very least, an average or above-average quarterback and a ton of talent as far as skill position guys. To me, if this team's not a top 10 offense, it's a disappointment with the money they've spent, the draft capital they've spent on offensive guys.
Yeah, there's no problem with you thinking that, but you're giving them a lot of things. You're giving their head coach, who's going to be the head coach and the offensive coordinator. You're saying that he's going to be able to create a plan. We don't know that. He wasn't very successful in Cleveland as a head coach. So why would I just say, oh, Pat Shurmur's going to put it all together? Why would I say that their busted right tackle is going to be a formidable player? He's not. He's not a good football player.
That I totally agree with you.
And that's not going to change. It's hard to hide a tackle. You can hide a center. You can hide a guard. But you can't hide a tackle. I know who Nate Solder is a player, regardless of what they spent for him in free agency. It's like Olivier Vernon. When they got him, I knew who he was. He's not a 15-sack-a-year guy, but they're paying him $17 million. He's exactly like Nate Solder. You pay more because you have to go out and get them. So that's who they are, though. That's not my fault. We'll see. If they can prove they can run the ball, their chances of creating man-to-man on the outside and making it easier for Odell, then that will be real. Then they'll have a chance to be a top-10 offense. I think they're going to be around the middle of the pack, and that's not a slight.
All right, let's take a break there. We'll talk about this some more. But coming up, how worried should the Eagles be about Nick Foles' struggles last night? Because that's what he did. Struggle. Next on First Things First. Time for some stories to start your morning. Back to Thursday Night Football, Eagles, Browns. If you watch the game, it would be hard not to notice how much Myles Garrett owned Nick Foles. He had two sacks, including one for a safety and two quarterback hits. CC, what'd you make of Garrett's performance last night?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, he's the type of athlete. I think that we forget. He missed the first part of last season, missed five games, still had seven sacks. If he don't have 15 sacks this year, I'll be shocked. Phenomenal athlete, explosive. I mean, he'll in the next 2 years be up for defensive MVP.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's who they drafted him to be. That's who he profiled out to be. He is in a – listen, there's a lot of freakish DNs in this league. From an athletic standpoint, he is near the top of that list. I'm not putting him at the top, but he measures out as
He's got
such.
Some pretty good video playing basketball, too. He's probably got more extensive video shooting than Ben Simmons. Check him out on YouTube. Check it out.
All right, that's next hour. Myles Garrett shooting turnaround jump shots.
Sticking with the Browns now, they reportedly still have interest in Dez Bryant, and talks are ongoing. They believe he has not fallen off as a player, and they want to add as many weapons as possible. Nick, what'd you make of this latest development?
Well, I think the Browns are trying to prolong this to where they can keep in contact with Dez until after week one, to where if they were to bring him in, the contract's not guaranteed. But I want to go back to something you said earlier about the Browns needing a speed wide receiver. You said they need more help at wide receiver, but it doesn't sound to me like the guy you were describing is the guy who Dez Bryant is.
No, they need Josh Gordon. They need a 1,000-yard Josh Gordon to be able to help that offense. Tyrod, Jarvis Landry, man, they're going to be able to run the ball. Carlos Hyde's a good player. Dez is a plan B. Their plan A is get Josh Gordon back up to full speed.
All right, on to the Chiefs now. They're wide out. Tyreek Hill had some interesting comments yesterday about how good he and quarterback Pat Mahomes might be. He said, quote, "I feel like me and Pat could be the best." Now, keep in mind, last season, Tyreek was seventh in receiving yards despite missing a game. Nick, do you agree with Tyree?
I think if he would have added something to it. I think they can be the best deep ball combo in the league this year, potentially. I don't think they're going to be the best quarterback wide receiver duo. Mahomes is essentially a rookie, and Tyreek does certain things very, very well as a wide receiver, but he's obviously not your prototypical can-do-it-all, run-every-route-on-the-route-tree wide receiver. But I think this type of play, they can be the best in the league at that. Mahomes uncorks one and Tyreek gets behind the defense. I do believe that.
Yeah, I believe they'll probably lead the NFL in most plays unscripted, like when the quarterback's scrambling and Tyreek decides to go deep. I think they're going to be very good at that. That's not hard to get in sync with a young quarterback. But the combination of Kelce, Sammy Watkins, they should have a special group of wide receivers. Now, as a group, I wish he would have said that. As a group, we can be the best in the NFL because he has no chance of being the best NFL wide receiver.
All right, we'll end with one of Dak Prescott's most important offensive linemen, center Travis Frederick. Frederick was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome, and it is unclear when he will return. CeCe, how will the loss of Travis Frederick impact Dak and the Cowboys' offense this season?
When we talked about Dallas and the amount of resources that they had put into their offensive line, and you have Zeke and Dak on their first contract. So if that offensive line... they really can't sustain an injury because they are the heart and soul of that football team. The defense, who we believe is going to be better, and I believe can be a top 10 defense, but they're not going to be as effective if they have to play 31 minutes a game and that time of possession that the Cowboys, because they can't run the ball. Now, besides a left tackle, a center is the most important cog to an offensive line because he is the quarterback. He's calling the protections. He's making all the line adjustments for all the line stunts. So a center is very, very important. And we want our quarterback and Dak in year three to grow. Man, Travis Frederick not being in there, that's going to hurt Dak. So he's got more responsibility in reading the front, reading the defense and helping the line make sure they get into the right calls. And it's an unfortunate injury. I had never heard of it. If I didn't have my good friend Mark Schlaer that gave me the information and I listened to a podcast with the information on it, man, this is awful. Very, very scary stuff. You're talking about paralysis. You're talking about long-term damage potentially. Now, they did get in there and diagnose him quick, and he's already received a second treatment. So the prognosis does look good, but... I mean, there's a chance he might miss all the season. I don't believe the Dallas Cowboys can recover from Travis Frederick, who's probably the best at his position in the league.
Well, so that last part is a key part. We talk about their offensive line, the three great offensive linemen they have. Tyron Smith is one of the best left tackles in football, and at times is the best. Zach Martin is one of the best guards in football, and you could argue he's the best. Travis Frederick is the best center in the league. Like, he's the best in the league at what he does. And let's also not forget, how did the Cowboys spend their second-round pick on an offensive lineman, a rookie who they would like, theoretically, to play right tackle? You know who a rookie right tackle would like to have? A veteran awesome center telling him about the checks, the protection shifts, the different things that Travis Frederick can do pre-snap. That is one of the reasons, in addition to everything he does post-snap, that makes him as good as he is. And this is, we talk about teams adding to their strength. The Eagles, they have a great D-line. Let's go add more D-linemen. The Cowboys are now subtracting from their strength. And nobody's got a deep offensive line. That's the thing. Is you might have a deep D-line. Like, I don't know there's a team in the league, no matter how good your starters on the offensive line are, where it's like, oh, we lost an offensive lineman. We got another great one to come in. Like, there's not
That'd be a good question. Who has the deepest offensive line?
Who's got the best backup guards in the league? Like, it doesn't exist. There's not enough right now human beings coming out of college football that know how to play the position well to where we have a lot of teams that have two quality offensive linemen, three quality offensive linemen. The Cowboys were in a great position because they had four, maybe five.
Yes.
It's not because they had eight. This is a big deal. It's a really big deal for a team that we said, what's the path for the Cowboys to getting back to the playoffs? The best offensive line in football is the first thing we always say, and then Ezekiel Elliott. Now, Zeke's a special enough running back. He doesn't have to have a great offensive line to be effective, but it sure as hell helps.
Where they miss Travis Frederick, too, in the passing game is him getting out on the screen passes. Typically, the center is the guy to get out there, and he's a great athlete, very, very smart player. So Zeke can be effective in the passing game, but I believe he will be effective in the running game because the center's ability to build a block at the line of scrimmage, and Travis can get up to that second level, and that's the reason why he's the best. It's not because he's the strongest, the fastest. He is a combination of all those things, and until he gets back in that lineup, until he gets back to full strength, because there's a thing with strength, weight loss involved in these issues that can be very, very troublesome for a professional football player, let alone just a regular person.
All right, let's get back to last night's game between the Browns and Eagles, a little Thursday night football. Carson Wentz did not play. Nick Foles did, sort of. Not the Nick Foles we came to know and love in last year's Super Bowl. This Nick Foles turned the ball over three times in the first half, was sacked three times, stripped for a fumble, and down for a safety. It was reported last night that Peterson was disappointed in Foles' performance. Peterson claims he was disappointed in the entire offense, not Foles specifically. Here is Nick Foles after the game.
I know that this game's a process and that I've played this game my whole life, and I haven't always played great games. There's times where these are the toughest ones where you just have to keep battling. It really shows you what you're made of deep inside. And I was going to keep firing it no matter what. I mean, I didn't want to throw any more picks, but as I was going to throw another one, I was going to keep firing the ball. You can't play with fear. I didn't play as clean as I wanted to, but I know that knowing me, knowing this team, that we're going to learn from and move forward. There's a lot of great stuff to learn from this game. It's an emotional game. It's not fun playing the way I did. It really hurt us tonight, but I know that I can improve and I will improve.
CeCe, this is just the preseason, but how concerning was Foles' struggles last night?
And not concerned. That's why Nick Foles is not a starter, because he's not consistent. You guys asked me last year in the last quarter of the season, Nick Foles, man, you guys worry? This is who Nick Foles is. Backup quarterbacks, they're not as consistent. They don't throw the ball as much. They don't make as good of decisions. They will turn the ball over. They are prone to interceptions in bundles. That's who Nick Foles is. Nick Foles caught fire NFC Championship game against the Vikings. Great crowd support. Man, he had some receivers make some plays. He made some throws. And in the Super Bowl, where he dueled with Tom Brady. But Nick Foles was not great last season. Let's not forget what really happened. So, no, I wouldn't be surprised. But I do like Nick Foles' attitude that he realized this team, you know, needs to support the quarterback, and he can win even though he doesn't play great. And I like the fact that, because he wouldn't have been this way early in his career. I was getting ready to throw it. I'm going to throw it. I don't know if they're going to catch it, but I didn't want to throw another pick. But I like that part, because that's the part, because he knows that his players and the coaching staff, they have confidence. Most backups, They don't have confidence in him. So Nick Foles, no, I wasn't alarmed. No, I wasn't. I didn't leave the game disappointed. Did he make a couple mistakes with the football? I don't want my veteran quarterback to make. Yes, but this is the way backup quarterbacks, and this is the way Nick Foles will play. If he was a starter for Philadelphia, you can get used to 5 or 6 games just like this.
This is what I thought I was going to see when I said the Eagles can't win the Super Bowl. When Carson Wentz got knocked out, I thought they had a typical backup quarterback. I thought Nick Foles was going to be the guy he had been the last few years. And you can't beat good teams with quarterback play like that. They had a great defensive game in their first playoff game when Nick Foles didn't play this poorly, but played really poorly. And then what you're saying is absolutely right. Like, it was, we saw the moment it happened when he caught Alshon Jeffrey down the sideline in the NFC Championship game. And from that moment forward until he's hoisting the Super Bowl trophy, he played 7 quarters of football, unlike anything we'd seen from him. People say, oh, what about that 27 touchdown, 2 interception? No. It wasn't those types of throws. That was a Chip Kelly offense.
Yep.
It was very different than, it was an out-of-body experience for Nick Foles. Now, what impact does it have? It has an impact to me on a few things. One is, I don't think you can help but be less optimistic about the Eagles' chances in Week 1 if Wentz isn't ready, because Nick Foles has not yet played well at any point in this preseason. Like, he got dinged and we thought he had a broken collarbone. Turned out he didn't. But the last game Nick Foles played well in was the Super Bowl. The other thing it does is, we've talked about if there's a quarterback injury, who's getting the phone calls. Well, I think the Jets will get phone calls for Teddy. The Colts might get phone calls for Jacoby Brissett. I think the Nick Foles trade market has cooled substantially for a team if there's a quarterback injury, based on where he was after the Super Bowl, where he is right now. But I maybe erroneously thought that Nick Foles had recaptured something. When you play that well on that stage, I think being confident is a huge part of being a pro athlete. Nothing could imbue you with more confidence than winning Super Bowl MVP, out-dueling Tom Brady. But he went right back to
Seen a lot of Super Bowl MVPs like Nick Foles who went right back to being normal.
Not at the quarterback position, though. You're right. We've seen Larry Brown. We've seen a lot of guys that were outlier MVPs on either defensive players. I totally agree. But we'd never seen quite this situation where it's the quarterback where he is out-dueling the greatest of all time. He's, you know, famous. Right.
I don't know if he out-dueled Tom Brady. Tom did throw for 500.
Okay, so you're right. He won it. He was eye-to-eye with Tom Brady in that football game.
Yes.
And so you're right. Brady played great. But where Foles played that well, on that stage against that opponent, and then in the preseason, we can't, by the way, say, oh, well, the Eagles didn't have all their guys. Like, Vitae didn't play well in that game. Myles Garrett ate his lunch. But Nick Foles, every game Nick Foles played last year was with Vitae. Like, the Eagles did what they did with backup players last season.
Were you concerned at all with the way the Eagles played and have been playing in the preseason?
I'm not concerned because their overall depth. They got a lot of good players, and their best player is not playing yet. Alshon Jeffries will also be added to that. So you add Carson Wentz, Alshon Jeffries, to Jason Peters, left tackle. Oh, shoot, you've added some ball players. Like, no, I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned. I don't get concerned with veteran teams that struggle in the preseason because they're trying to accomplish a number of different things that younger teams aren't. Nick Foles has not looked well. Vitae, right tackle, has not looked well. So they've had some players in particular that have not looked well, but I believe that the Eagles will be ready Week 1 against the Falcons.
The concerning thing for the Eagles for the first 2 weeks of the preseason was the defense looked really shoddy. They allowed 31 points in the first preseason game. The Patriots scored 100 on them. Yesterday, the defense looked like the Super Bowl defense, but they, of course, offensively did the least you can do in a football game. They got shut out, and they got shut out by the Browns, and we don't think the Browns' strength is going to be the defense. To me, the most instructive part of yesterday's game was, and it wasn't just Nick Foles, but it was how much, I'm going to keep mentioning this player's name today, how much a great D-end can wreck a game plan. Myles Garrett was all over the backfield, and Vitae could do nothing with him. Now, Jason Peters is 37 years old. coming off a torn ACL. Like, he's also one of the great left tackles in this league. And so that is there some concern that if Jason Peters, either age or injury, that the Eagles don't have? We were talking about what teams have great backup offensive linemen. We thought the Eagles had a very quality swing tackle. I am less confident in that today than I was yesterday. So that part is at least moderately concerning to me as well.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, did Hugh Jackson make a mistake putting Tyrod back in the game? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Chris Caney joining the show.
What up, man? Good to
see you. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jenna, how you
doing? How's it going?
I'm good. Doing pretty good.
Awesome. All right, so the Cleveland Browns have been telling us all preseason that Tyrod Taylor is the team starter. So when Taylor fell, bent his wrist back, left the game, and then came back, people thought he'd be done for the night. He did return to finish out the first half, but never came back out to the sideline after halftime. Baker Mayfield did come in, sputtered with that first unit, only threw for 76 yards and a pick on the night. All right, Chris Caney, we're going to get to Baker in just a second. But first, what was your reaction to Tyrod coming back in the game after hurting his wrist?
Well, it felt like a player that wanted to get back out on the field. And I think Tyrod understands the inevitable that at some point, Baker Mayfield is going to replace him as the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. I mean, this is something that's obvious. When players are in the NFL and you see guys
drafted. Have you ever been in this position?
No, I've never been in this position. I never had a guy as a first-round pick drafted at my position. But guys understand it. If you've been around the National Football League for any period of time, you know that when they draft somebody with one of those high picks or your spot.
And you came in to take someone else's spot.
As a free agent, exactly. When they start signing guys in free agency or they use high draft picks on players, you know the inevitable that that guy is going to be at the top of the depth chart. It's like Vegas. Money plays. The Cleveland Browns have more invested in Baker Mayfield than they do Tyrod Taylor. So at some point, Tyrod is not going to be the starting quarterback. So he wants to take advantage of the opportunity while he has it so he can showcase his abilities and hopefully he'll be able to get another job as a starting quarterback at one of the other 31 teams.
And the Browns have been very clear on their messaging. Tyrod's our starter. We want Tyrod to start the whole year. There is one easy for every team in the league exit ramp from whatever you've been messaging, and that's injury. Like, that isn't abandoning your plan. That isn't going different from what you've said. That isn't changing the message. It's injuries happen in this league. Guy got hurt, next man up, see how he plays. Now, that I saw him fall, and in real time, I thought he was seriously injured. I didn't think Tyrod would be able to put himself back into the game. It looked to me maybe the angle was odd, but I know Troy and Joe also thought when they showed coming back from break the replay that it looked like his wrist bent in a funny direction, that it wouldn't bend unless it was either dislocated or there was some type of fracture. But when you saw him he ran off the field, runs into the locker room, I assume to get the x-ray. They find out he doesn't have a fracture, and then he's standing on the sideline with nothing on his arm. He looked like a guy who was thinking exactly that. No, no, no. The game plan was for me to get this many series. I mean, just because we're going to have to go back and forth, I'm still getting that many series because we can't also look at this knowing Baker struggled. Like, Tyrod didn't know Baker was going to struggle. Baker didn't know he was going to struggle. It's a very different narrative if Tyrod gets dinged but is not injured moving forward, as is the case, and Baker continues what he had done up to this point in the preseason, which is play clean, effective football against backups, by the way, with an easier defensive front. So I totally get why Tyrod, not many starting quarterbacks would have to do this, but Tyrod's kind of the starter with an asterisk, which is why he, I think, had to do this.
But does Tyrod have the last say in whether he plays or not? Like, is there a little response? And I don't know, I'm just asking. Is there a responsibility by the team to say, we know Baker's not ready to start. We know Tyrod is our starter. I know the x-rays were negative, but I don't want to put him in a position where maybe there was a tear or something. Why don't we just shut him down for the night? It's not going to change our opinion on anything. Isn't that the responsibility of the team to maybe jump in and say,
well, first, when
we
he
get
got
it.
Injured, he went into the tent. Then he went into the locker room. In the locker room, they have every state-of-the-art piece of equipment. They have qualified doctors that they knew exactly when he came out of the locker room. Now, as a player, at that point, what is there an injury? No, there's not an injury. It's called a woo-woo. It's called being nicked. It's called everyday life in the NFL. So at that point, the training staff cleared him. So at that point, Tyrod and the coach probably had a conversation. He's like, how do you feel? He said, I feel good enough to go back in. And at that point, it's up to the player if he can go in to be able to join his teammates, they are at work, and to be able to finish this preseason game. This is how you turn the culture around, by a guy playing when he doesn't have to play. All right, because we can't forget they've won one game in two seasons. Mm-hmm. Right. So if everyone took off when we had a little nick, all right, you can't develop some type of culture. And that's also the reason why yesterday when you talked about Josh Rosen, he hurt his thumb. Right? What'd you say, Nick?
That that's going to happen during a game, and he's going to have to play the very next play. That it's that in an odd way for him, that injury was actually a good thing because it gives him some experience of playing after how many times a year we see a guy bang his thumb on somebody's helmet? Like, that's a real thing.
Tyrod has no history with the Cleveland Browns and with the players.
Yeah.
You know how you develop history? You know how I trust you? See you in there.
Yep.
See you battling with me. That's how I develop trust, not just because you're on the team. So this is why you must have training camp. It's why you must have preseason games. And Tyrod did the professional thing by going back in there and joining his teammates and trying to continue being the starting quarterback for the Browns.
And CeCe, I think you make a point when you talk about guys trying to make themselves available even when they're working through nicks and bruises. That's good for the other 52 guys on the roster. But when you talk about the starting quarterback, that cat is a little bit different just because you recognize the hopes and dreams of the franchise. How you feed your family is based in part by how that guy performs. So you need to make sure that your starting quarterback is available. But, Nick, you said Tyrod is that quarterback with an asterisk, right? Just because you know that the number one overall pick is sitting behind him. So he becomes a little bit more expendable for the organization.
And he has a bigger sense of urgency. What you're talking about, Jenna, where the coaching staff says, listen, we know you're fine. We're going to let the backup play. I think for the vast majority of teams, I don't want to go through all of them now, but for the vast majority of teams, that's exactly what would happen. Like, there's Aaron Rodgers, for example, doesn't have anything to prove to his teammates, and he's the unquestioned starter. If he gets nicked at all, even if he goes in, oh, he's fine. Once he comes out of a preseason game, he's not going to go back in the preseason game. But Tyrod has, of all the quarterbacks in the league that have been declared the week one starter, his hold on the job is the most tenuous. He's the one with the biggest asset sitting behind him. Like, he's the one also that is newest to his team. Like, at least Josh McCown, for example, was with the Jets last year, and Darnold was the third pick. Tyrod wasn't with the Browns, and Baker was the first pick. And of all the rookie quarterbacks prior to last night, Baker's played the best. Baker's played really well in this preseason. So for all those reasons, like, Tyrod doesn't want to be Wally Pipps here.
Not in the preseason. But when I got cut by Buddy Ryan, I went to Minnesota, and I was trying to learn the offense. They had Anthony Carter, Hassan Jones, both of them established wide receivers, Steve Jordan, a great tight end. About the third game of the season, we went to Philadelphia. Anthony Carter hurt his hamstring in warm-up. They said, Chris, are you ready to go? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Look it up. I think I went for like 160 on Monday night. Mm. And after that, it was a wrap for Anthony Carter. His career in Minnesota was totally marginalized. That was one of the worst days of his career. And that was the day that he happened to just get a little nick on his hamstring and couldn't go on a Monday night. So I don't like to be disingenuous on TV. And I never recommend something to another player that I wouldn't do. So I understand why Tyrod went back in there. I understand why he came out of the locker room. I understand why he grabbed his helmet, because his professional career is in the balance, and it's just so easy, and it's not really responsible. People say, you know, the coaches should have kept him out. No, Tyrod did the right thing for his career.
Well, and the people also, I think, when you're talking about Tyrod's career, even if you're watching saying Tyrod knows that he's not the starter in Cleveland next year. But that doesn't mean he's not the starter somewhere next year. Mm-hmm. And I overreacted things. I thought he broke his wrist. And so I saw it, and I thought, and I know I'm not the only one. I think Joe and Troy thought he was seriously injured. A lot of people thought he was seriously injured. In my head, I do the whole thing. And I'm like, man, Tyrod, not only is Baker now the starter here, but who's going to pay Tyrod to be their starter going into camp next year? Like, I was, the whole trajectory could be different. Now, no matter how long he's the starter in Cleveland, he has the ability to show the other teams in the league, I can be a starter for you.
And I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, because Tyrod could have a great future as a part-time starter in Cleveland. He could win Dorsey and them over this. Say, you know something? We're not paying them that much money. Let's keep him here with Baker. Him and Baker have something together. And when you go out there and you play in preseason games like that, people in the front office, you can win those people over. But saying, you know, man, let's keep him here. Like, he can be a foundational brick to getting this whole thing turned around in Cleveland. He don't have to go somewhere else. He could be right there as a foundational player, backing up Baker Mayfield once he becomes a starter and being a great support system for the Cleveland Browns and getting that culture change.
And, CC, I think he's well on his way to being able to help Hugh Jackson and John Dorsey do that. Just from watching the footage from Hard Knocks and seeing how everybody responds to him, you know, Tyrod Taylor is one of those consummate professionals, making sure he's the first one in the building and the last one to leave, trying to set the example for all of the young guys, trying to teach Baker Mayfield the process and what it means to go about your business as a quarterback, being able to understand the game plans, the playbook, week in, week out. Those types of things are tough for young guys to learn if somebody's not teaching them. But Tyrod has already shown a willingness to be that guy to show all of the young players that. And Hugh Jackson, he's earned his trust, and I think that's the biggest thing. When you start talking about your starting quarterback, that him and the head coach have to have that relationship where they trust each other, and I think that's why Hugh, in part, let him back in that game last night.
All right, Chris, thanks. Stick around. Coming up, could Deshaun Watson challenge for the MVP this season? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with Chris Canty. You know, Canty, only one of us out here had the Texans winning the Super Bowl last year. I'm not naming names, and that was because of their dynamic quarterback, Deshaun Watson. No, it's because they were on Hard Knocks last year, and I think every team that's on Hard Knocks.
You fall in love with them
yep,
every time.
Yep, that's it. Sucker! It. Watson was outstanding before his ACL injury, ending his season last year, as was Carson Wentz, who was leading the Eagles to the league's best record before tearing ligaments in his knee. Both are looking to have bounce-back years in 2018. But, Chris, how hard is it to bounce back to form for these guys?
Well, it's going to be really hard. I think Deshaun Watson will have an easier road just because he has experience with that same injury. He had it in college. So you know what it is that second time around to go through the rehab and what it's going to take and the timeline to where you're going to start feeling like yourself. But you have to understand, you're working with a new body. And so I think for Carson Wentz, that will be the biggest adjustment for him. And you can point to the clips that they showed of him working out in the pregame routine where he slipped and he stumbled a little bit with his footwork that he was working on, simulating being in the pocket and going through his progression. So I think there is a little bit of a learning curve when understanding how to deal with the rehab of this injury. And more so, it's the mental state that you're in. Just making sure that you understand that it's not going to be an overnight result in terms of being able to be back to where you were when he injured that knee in Los Angeles back in December. So I think that both guys are in a good situation. Deshaun Watson has a good complement of skill position players that will be able to support him. When he returns, he'll be able to get the ball in those guys' hands, let them do the heavy lifting on the offensive end. And then Carson Wentz, of course, has Nick Foles, a Super Bowl MVP, as his backup. So there's no read to rush right there. If anything, the coaching staff is going to have to slow down Carson Wentz because he's going to be in a hurry to prove that he is one of those quarterbacks that merits MVP consideration, especially when your backup has that level of success.
Yeah, great observation. I think you saw some of the same things that I saw from last night, because I thought the video of Carson Wentz before the game that Troy Aikman and Joe Buckingham talked about was very impressive. I've seen a lot of quarterbacks work out, but I think that when we think about quarterback injuries, we don't think about Carson Wentz, how strong he is. Like, look how powerful his legs are. He's a mobile quarterback. He is a great athlete, not a good athlete. He's got a big-time arm, and his lead leg, not his back leg in his throwing motion, was the one that was injured. If it was his back leg, the one he was pushing off of, no, because your front leg in throwing the football just helps you more guide the ball. Your back leg helps you push off and go with
it. So you'd be more concerned about his ability to recover from this if it's his right leg?
Yes, it would be a little slower. Now, we're still 9 months from inside of 9 months from when he did injure, which you said, Canty, in December. But he's a powerful athlete, and you can see that he's so far advanced in his workouts. The only thing that he hadn't had is just live bodies around his legs. But you can see with the cone drills that they were doing, with him anticipating being able to move in and out of the pocket, he is a great athlete. He's just not some nimble guy. He is not Teddy Bridgewater when he got hurt. He is not Sam Bradford when he got hurt.
He's not even RG3, who was a great athlete but didn't have the strength throughout his body that
right.
Carson Wentz
has. So that's what I've seen with Carson Wentz. And watching video coming out of the Texans practice, I think Deshaun Watson's throwing motion has really gotten even quicker as far as releasing the football. People talk about his deep ball, lack of being accurate. He's proved that last year he can do that. Mm-hmm. Now, can he do that over a season? I believe both of their stats, which their touchdown to interception ratio, Nick and I have talked about this, it might not be as great as it was last year, but they could still have the MVP type of seasons because that's just the way it goes. When Aaron Rodgers was MVP, when he came back the next year, he threw more interceptions, but he was still on a level that you would consider him. You see that in Brady year in and year out.
Well, so that I think right there is the key. Bill Barnwell wrote a great article on this. He's one of, I think, the smartest football writers out there talking about, let's pretend these guys didn't get hurt. And say, where do we think they will regress from last year, right? So let's remove the knee injury entirely. What was the thing about Wentz I couldn't stop talking about last year? How amazing he was on third down. It was one of the best third down quarterbacking seasons we've seen in a decade. It was actually, according to Barnwell, one of the 10 best seasons. Mm-hmm. The other guys on the list, Brady's got a couple years, Manning, mm-hmm. Rodgers, Breeze, every single one of those guys. The next year was much closer to league average on third down. In that regard, the water finds its level. So when he has a 123 rating on third downs, like, hurt or not, you can't duplicate that year after year. That's Carson Wentz. Now on Deshaun Watson. Watson had a remarkable season in this regard. He had the third highest interception rate in the NFL. Only Kaiser and Simeon were higher. And he still had these unbelievable numbers. Unbelievable because of the volume of touchdowns. Because receivers only dropped 1% of passes that he was throwing when the league average is about 4.
Right.
Those are areas where if he never hurt his knee, you are likely, it's hard to have that type of great season with that many interceptions. The last quarterback to do it, according to Barnwell, was Y.A. Tittle. Mm. That was in 1963. So there's reason to believe for both of these guys, statistically, they won't be the same, even if their bodies are as healthy as ever. And we know their bodies obviously aren't as healthy as ever.
I know Deshaun Watson was so fantastic coming out of college, but was last year too small of a sample size for you, CC, to know that he's going to be able to be this good or to be able to project? We saw so much more from Carson Wentz last season.
No, I believe Deshaun Watson is going to be a great football player. It's just a matter of when he hits. And I try to talk to Nick about the difference between the good players and the great ones. The great ones get to their peak earlier. They get to their prime earlier, and they hang in there longer. It's just a matter of when he gets there. And then once he gets there, how long can he stay there? Because I believe he is going to be one of the faces of the National Football League for the next 10 years. He is what we've wanted to see between Cam Newton and Michael Vick. That's who Deshaun Watson is. He is that new cat. And I believe he's going to dominate in the league for a long time.
Yeah, I agree with you, CeCe. I think he wants to be great, and he's willing to put in the work. And you see his understanding of the NFL game. You don't usually see quarterbacks have that quick an ascent in terms of being able to grasp what the NFL game is all about and get acclimated to it. But, Nick, you said something about the statistical seasons of Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson, and maybe they might regress mm-hmm. back to league average. The one thing I will say, and I'm agreeing with you in that capacity, the one thing I will say is by both of those quarterbacks being on the field, you're going to see a difference in terms of how they impact their team winning. Oh. When Deshaun Watson was out there on the field last year, the Houston Texans averaged over 30 points a game. When he wasn't the starting
13.
Quarterback, it was less than 20. Yeah. So you see that. And, of course, with the Philadelphia Eagles and Carson Wentz, yeah. they were the best team in football. Now, I understand that Nick Foles went 5-1 as the starter mm-hmm. once he got hurt mm-hmm. and they won the Super Bowl, but it's
they
a different
team.
It's a different team. Listen, that Atlanta Falcons game in the divisional round in Philadelphia is not as close if Carson Wentz is the starting quarterback. So I look at that and I say maybe he might not have the same statistical season, but Carson Wentz,
same impact on
when he's there, their team is going to have, it's going to be the same impact on winning.
He made them coaches a lot better, too.
He sure did. Got them coaches a lot richer, too.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.